Blog Talk Radio.
International cooperation. 75 years ago, the United Nations General Assembly adopted the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Historic act of international cooperation and a powerful assertion of common humanity. Drafted by a committee led by Eleanor Roosevelt, but comprising, among others, leading figures from Lebanon, Chile, and China, the Declaration proclaimed a common standard of achievement for all peoples and all nations. It codified the innate human rights of freedom and dignity, irrespective of nationality, place of residence, sex, national or ethnic origin, religion, language, or any other status. Over the decades, that Universal Declaration of Human Rights has been a pivotal reference point, inspiring legal codes and norms, improving billions of lives. But today, as we mark this important anniversary, there is still much to reflect on. Authoritarianism is on the march. Crucial individual rights are being rolled back, from the right to a girl's education in Afghanistan, to a woman's right to bodily autonomy in the United States. Free speech is under attack in many parts of the world and increasingly across the expanses of cyberspace. Meanwhile, as armed conflicts become longer and bloodier, old norms on war crimes and the treatment of civilians are giving way to a new age of impunity. And the climate crisis is exacerbating all of these pressures, flooding, heat waves and droughts, leading to new conflicts, forced migration, and within them, new persecution and human rights abuses. As geopolitical tensions mount, the meaning of universal rights itself is contested, with some states placing great emphasis on individual ones and others on group ones. It is clear that the current human rights architecture is overwhelmed by these divisions between states. The United Nations, the very cradle of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, still has a fundamental role to play, but in an age of growing fragmentation, it often finds itself on the sidelines. So today, as we contemplate the future, we must be ready to innovate. New coalitions, including full groups of states, but also civil society organizations and grassroots movements have a central role to play. So too do new digital technologies which make possible new ways of organizing and demanding accountability. If in 1948 Eleanor Roosevelt symbolized the international nature of human rights campaigning, today, in a different and more challenged political context, the campaigners must be each of us, from Beijing to Nairobi, Moscow to London, each recognizing human rights as the guarantee of our freedom and fulfillment as human beings.
And greetings. Welcome to a special edition of New Day, Resurrection and Liberation. My name is Empress Chi, and of course, yesterday was the 75th year commemoration of what is known as the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, as you just heard. One of our missions at this time is to make certain that we provide the necessary vehicles for the masses of our people to get better acquainted with certain things. What we've realized in the past 5 years since we started the We Charge Genocide 21 campaign is that the everyday black person, folk, family, community hasn't a clue about what others within the black community is talking about and doing. One of those things, or a few of those things, of course, has to do with the issue of human rights violations and reparations. And so what we realized over the past few years is that while there's a lot of conversation going on, the proper kinds of apparatuses that is needed in our communities to really get our people more familiar with what we're talking about and what we're doing, those kinds of things are not really happening. Now, it's not to say that they won't be happening in the near future, but the fact of the matter is they ain't happening right now. And so what MWM, Universal Movements, and our We Charge Genocide 21 campaign is actually doing is making this information more readily available, structured in a manner that is going to be easily not only obtained but palatable or digested, comprehended. And so what we're beginning to do now is to create media kinds of interactions where people can get access to tutorials, for lack of a better terminology, but information that is going to be simplified in a lot of situations and, again, made readily available to the masses of our people. So with that said, Kwanzaa for us is not only going to represent the seven principles of Kwanzaa in the context of the Nguza Saba, it is also going to represent the seven plus principles of Ma'at. So we'll be introducing what we call the Ma'atic Kwanzaa Nguza Saba because we want to begin to help our people to utilize the principles that we've become familiar with for Kwanzaa, but now put that together with the principles, some of the principles of Ma'at, so that we can now look at more of a day-to-day kind of apparatus or application. So we're going to be introducing that this year for the Kwanzaa season and taking it, of course, straight into next year. With that said, tonight we want to, again, begin to kind of kick off this whole week. We're going to be bringing you information segments that will focus on human rights, particularly as it pertains to our people here in the U.S. Now, that doesn't mean that we're not going to be building with and focusing on the human rights violations of our people all over the diaspora. It's just that at some point you have to be very focused, and particularly when you're talking about obtaining remedies. And so you can't lump everything in all at one time as it pertains to other locales, other regions, other laws or you know, other terrains, whatever. And so there's something very specific that has happened here in the U.S. for over 400 years. Now, of course, that's connected to the diaspora, but there's something specifically that has happened in this land. And so it behooves us to address that adequately. So again, with the We Charge Genocide 21, next year we'll be holding several conferences. Now, with this said, let me make something very clear. For 5 years, we have been doing this work consistently, hoping that there would be various groups and organizations and people who would see that we're doing this work and want to connect, collaborate, or whatever. Well, there was a crude awakening with that, because that just did not happen. In fact, not only did it not happen, but we ran into situations where we were literally being sabotaged or something else. And so this has been happening for a while, but now we're like, no, that's not going to keep happening, and we don't say anything. So now we're going to make it very clear as to what is going on and how and who. Some of it we won't express externally, publicly, but some of it we will. And we will definitely begin to address it internally, or shall we say behind closed doors, when it comes to certain kinds of things that need to be conveyed in that way. But it definitely is going to now be dealt with, because we cannot continue to have the kinds of situations where the masses of our people are really being put in a disadvantaged state a state of being unnecessarily. And so what we realize now is that this has been happening for a while, meaning you have various entities who have been trying to do various things, and the kinds of things that are put into the way, again, we already know dealing with the system of off-white supremacy, that's going to happen anyway. We got that. But to have it happen with people who look like you, talk the same kind of stuff you be talking, and so forth, that's a bit too much now. We're in a serious situation and can no longer allow it. So with that said, this entire week, we will be doing sessions on Zoom and on our blog, which is this, that focuses on history, information, and other things as it pertains to civil, particularly human rights, but also what we call inalienable rights and natural rights. But we're not going to elaborate a lot on the latter just yet. Our major focuses are human rights violations. And now we're going to begin literally teaching speak outs, tutorials, and other things so that our people will now be able to get access to this information that they need to know. And we need to be more responsible in making sure that they're able to know. So, again, you'll hear from Philadelphia, and then we're going to take it to other cities. We will be leaving pamphlets and other kind of materials in the libraries, in some of the churches, in some of the laundromats, and other locations that we know black folks are often frequent, because we want to make sure that the way things are being done is not continued in that same manner, particularly when it's not really helping the masses of our people to any real degree. And so, again, this week we'll kind of give you some insight into how we're going to proceed. Now, on Wednesday, I believe it is, yep, on Wednesday, we're going to be doing a special feature on Ella Baker, and we now call her Saint Ella Baker. And we're going to put that in the context, of course, of civil rights and again, bringing it into the 21st century and focusing on human rights. But we need to make sure that people are able to get information. And, again, we know that many of our listeners already know certain things. But, again, we're going to start publicizing or marketing this radio broadcast as well as other radio broadcasts to the masses of our people, not just to the folk who already are on some kind of conscious level. We can't continue to operate like that. We got to get into our communities. And there's no excuse not to do that now because, you know, we're not under this COVID thing. And so now we're going to make certain that we, again, do what is responsible, responsible things to do and get it done. So, again, we open up tonight. We're giving you a little bit of insight on the 75th year commemoration of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And that was an official United Nations presentation, briefing. Needless to say, there's more to it than that in a lot of different ways. That was the kind of dressed up version of it and also the kind of glossy version of it with talking about Eleanor Roosevelt and how that was started and blah, blah, blah. And you need to hear that and know that, or our people need to hear that and know that. We're going to give you our rendition and addition of certain things as well. Again, it needs to be understood how some of this came about, meaning the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. How did it actually begin to go into effect? What influenced it? And now here's something that's really be noted. Should it be amended? And I mean amended in a manner that is going to make the instrument more functional. This is what we're going to be talking about later this week. So, moving right along, we're going to go to another quick briefing about what the Universal Declaration of Human Rights is from an international law perspective. And then we're going to kind of go into some other things that we need to give you information about. But for now, let's check this out. Hold on one moment. Okay, here we go.
What is the Universal Declaration of Human Rights? International law visualized. In 1948, the UN General Assembly adopted the Universal Declaration of Human Rights under Article 55 of the Charter to promote universal respect and observance of human rights and fundamental freedoms for all without distinction as to race, sex, language, or religion. Comprising 30 substantive articles, the Universal Declaration set out the fundamental rights to be guaranteed to all people, like dignity, liberty, equality, and brotherhood, the right to life, and the prohibition of slavery, the individual rights in civil and political society, and the freedom of religion and association, in addition to social, economic, and cultural rights. The Universal Declaration of Human Rights has, since its adoption, exercised a powerful impact throughout the world, both internationally and nationally, and have been quoted as justification for various measures taken by the United Nations, and have inspired many international conventions and influenced national constitutions, municipal legislation, and court decisions. Although not legally binding, the contents of the Declaration have been incorporated into subsequent international treaties, human rights instruments, national constitutions, and laws, and as a code of conduct or a yardstick to measure the degree of compliance with the international standards of human rights. From the Universal Declaration came the legally binding international covenants on civil and political rights and on economic, social, and cultural rights.
Okay, so that again gives you a little bit of insight into just briefly what the Universal Declaration of Human Rights is, and you know, from a legal context. Now, note, it is not binding. That means that even though it's a document, an official document, an important document, at the same time, it's not something that forces countries that have signed on to it to actually do anything. It's really a guide to help, you know, entities to function in a certain manner as it pertains to morally, ethically, and so forth as a government or as a body that, you know, has some kind of jurisdiction over a group of people. So that's kind of, you know, it is that we basically are talking about and have heard. So moving right along, what are the actual articles, or shall we say, what are the actual, let me see how to put this. Articles. What are the articles of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights? Because this document does include what is known as, areas for people to look at, to focus on in terms of, what things are considered human rights, for example. So what I'm going to do is, let's see if I can pull that up for you. We want to go to the actual Universal Human Rights articles. Okay, so give me a moment, family. I want to pull that up for you. And let me see. Okay. All right, so what we're going to do is share that with you, and here we are. Hold on for one moment. Let's see if I can pull up something for you that is going to give you that information. And bear with me for 1 minute. Oh, hold on. Okay. Now, there are actually 25 articles in the Human Rights Declaration. Okay. And so that's what I'm going to bring to your attention right about now. This is freezing up on me, so just give me a minute. Okay, let's try. Wow. Hold on, family. I'm trying to pull this piece up, and it's giving me a little bit of complications here. Nope. All right, that's the same one. All right, let's do this. I may have to read it all for you because for some reason I'm having a problem trying to get it open, but maybe I'm going to try one more time. Maybe we can do it now. Okay, let's see. I still have a little technical problem here. It still isn't coming up.
Hello, friends.
Okay.
Peter, we talk about the Kingdom Parish study rules. Those are nothing but the articles.
Okay. Nope. Sorry about that. It's not coming up clearly. All right. So what I'm going to do, if I can, I'm going to pull it up and just read it to you so that we can at least get a general idea of what it is that I'm talking about, which, of course, again, is the International Universal Declaration of Human Rights. So I'm going to pull mine up from my document, and I will just read some of that to you, okay? Okay, do this. All right, the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. I'm just going to read briefly the preamble. The preamble is: the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, also known as UDHR, is considered a milestone document in the history of human rights. Drafted by representatives with different legal and cultural backgrounds from all regions of the world, the Declaration was proclaimed by the United Nations General Assembly in Paris on December 10th, 1948. And all of these documents, of course, family, is structured in such a way where you can always research it. So this particular document is General Assembly Resolution 217A. Again, General Assembly Resolution 217A. As a common standard of achievement for all peoples and all nations. So now, again, family, that's part of the preamble. I'm going to read the rest of it in a few moments, but note, we are presenting this information and making certain that folks have the capability to access it at any time. Once we air this tonight, it will be available in our archives for your review, and you can also share it with others. Going back to the preamble, the UDHR, which of course is the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, sets out for the first time fundamental human rights to be universally protected, and it has been translated into over 500 languages. The UDHR is widely recognized as having inspired and paved the way for the adoption of more than 70 human rights treaties applied today on a permanent basis at global and regional levels, all containing references to it is in the preambles. So again, we're talking about a document that is in, you know, came out of the United Nations. Now, it is probably arguable that, you know, the stuff is really not working. I mean, just look at the atrocities that's going on all over the country. So obviously something has kind of gone awry. Well, again, you have to take it all in stride, and what that means is you have to have something to work with. And so this gives us at least, and I made an error, I said 25, it's actually 30 articles, my mistake. So again, we have to start with something, and it definitely, you know, has to at least have some kind of capability to be recognized or approved or at least acknowledged by, you know, a larger body, right? And so that's what this is. It enables us to use this as a reference point and to build from. So it's not like, you know, we got any, you know, grand kind of expectations about certain things beyond a certain point. But at the same time, we do know that you have to sometimes start with something. And so with that said, this Universal Declaration of Human Rights does, in fact, enable us to do that. Okay, again, for those who are interested in being involved in, we now have several committees, because next year will, in fact, be what is known as the final year for what's known as the International Decade for African People. So with that said, we now are putting task force committees together so that we are able to be involved in some of what's going to be going on next year. And there's going to be a lot going on because this is an international initiative. And so when we talk about the Universal Declaration of Human Rights now, we're also looking at how that is going to be applied for next year when the conversations and dialogues are put in place in regards to the International Decade for African People. So again, we have two components. One is the We Charge Genocide 21, which has its now its task force for next year's International Decade for African People. Now, later on this week, we will be having kind of a pre-meeting or conversation or dialogue for that task force group. The other, and again, that's one of the We Charge Genocide 21 components. The other thing, or the other one, is specifically for our women, so that Black women, African women, can have a very distinct voice in this dialogue that is in reference to African women, Black women. So we're going to do that conversation on January 26th. But this particular session, I believe, is going to be on January the 1st. I got to check my notes. For the sisters, right? January the 1st. And so with that said, we're looking at developing now what we call the African Women's United Nations so that our sisters can be represented based on their country, based on their nation, in such a way that we are a collective. So I'll be telling you a little more about that as we go on tonight. But before I go back to some of the articles for the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, I just want to share with you a little overview of the International Decade for African People. And with that, I'll read just a brief paragraph for that. And it says, the International Decade for People of African Descent was formulated in, it actually went into effect 2015 to 2024. It was proclaimed by the United Nations General Assembly in a resolution. And going back to that number again, for any kind of research or other ways you want to look it up to get some specifics, the resolution number is 68/237. Again, resolution, and this is United Nations General Assembly, resolution 68/237. Now, it was adopted on December 23rd, 2013. Note again, it was adopted, meaning it was approved by the body on December 23rd, 2013, but it went into effect in 2010. It will end in 2024. So the theme for the International Decade for People of African Descent, it indicates that in recognition of justice and development, justice and development for people of African descent. Now note, this is an international observance. So next year, people from all over the world are going to have these conversations dealing with issues relevant to African people all over the world. So while there will be collective discussions to look at the whole, there's going to also be, for lack of a better word, individual or distinct discussions based on your country. And this is why, again, we do not know much about these things, meaning like on the more grassroots level or in the general populace. This information is generally kept from us. And those who claim to represent us and other gatekeeping kind of entities and so forth, they tend to have this kind of information. They get access to whatever resources and other kinds of things that is often available. And then the masses of the people, they don't know anything about what's going on. So this is where we come in at, because we're going to make certain that our people do know about this now. So again, the International Decade for African People is in effect as we speak, and it will end next year. Final year is 2024. Now, it's important again that we realize that this type of thing has an overall effect in the context of you're able to meet people. You're able to develop relationships with people, and not just individual people, but groups, organizations, nations, institutions. This kind of apparatus allows you to get access to that. Now, MWM is working on developing what's known as an NGO, but we're being very careful about, you know, how we're going to establish that, because we don't want that directly linked to our independent modes of operations. MWM will never be under a jurisdiction of this system or any system beyond a certain point. So again, when you lock yourself in or put yourself in a situation to do things within the system, you have to be very cognizant of certain things. And so when you start developing nonprofit statuses, and again, NGOs are nonprofit entities. And so what we will be doing prior to establishing our NGO, which will be a separate entity from our MWM Universal Movement's operations on another end of it. But before we do that, we're going to set up several civil societies within the MWM construct. And so we're going to start explaining or giving you more information as to how we are structured, why we're structured that way, and how we are advancing those things now, because it's just time to do that. Again, next year we'll end the International Decade for African People. So we want to be ready and make sure that we are established in these international circles accordingly. Again, we're now getting ready to establish several civil societies. So with the African Women's United Nations, or the United Nation of African Women, there's two modes of operations there. This will begin to position us globally as an entity of collective women of African descent. And it will allow us to not only come together, but to provide information, reports, and also to come to agreements on how we want to proceed in accomplishing certain other things. It also will enable us to deal with training and other kinds of things. For example, most black women are not involved, and I'm talking about groups, organizations, and so forth, they're not involved in what's known as the lobbying processes. Whereas other groups of women are doing that. They go into various circles and deal with lobbying or other kinds of advocacies in such a way that it can have an effect on policy. But grassroots women generally are not given those opportunities or capabilities. it is usually kept within the circles of the elite or the so-called learned or, you know, whatever. And most of them tend to be in bed with the corporations. And I don't mean that literally, although in some cases it is. But again, their close ties to corporations are as such where they're only going to do but so much to get us out of this mess or out of this system in the manner or in such a way that the control becomes less over us. So this has been a serious problem for at least 100 years when you begin to look at the work and the words of the Honorable Marcus Garvey, the Honorable Elijah Muhammad, and others. You will see some very similar things being said and done because, for the most part, there are entities where they tend to have the capability to have greater access to information and other things, and they usually are not going to put that back into the communities at large in such a way that it's going to be beneficial to the greatest extent to our communities. And here's why, family, just, you know, to put it out there, they really don't feel that folks are capable because, you know, many may not have the formal education or training, and so it is indicated that, you know, they just need to follow, and this is what has been happening. And our position is, you know, there's some truth in that, but then there's also not some truth in that, that there are many of our people who do not have so-called formal education who are just as capable, if not more so, than some of the people who got their little sheepskin. Now, that's what it used to be called, y'all, sheepskin, meaning their diploma or their certification or whatever. We strongly believe that many of our ancestors had none of that, and yet were incredible inventors, freedom fighters, and you name it. So clearly that's not the qualificational, you know, litmus scale that we need to be looking at all the time. At any rate, moving right along, the International Declaration of Human Rights is what we're talking about tonight. And let me just ask as we go, before we go any further, if there's any questions or comments from anyone that has something they want to share with us in regards to what we're talking about tonight, you can press 1 now, and we will certainly give you the opportunity to share anything that you might want to share about the Universal Declarations of Human Rights or anything else that we've talked about thus far. So, again, you can press 1, and we will definitely, engage in your question or comment or what have you. Okay, doesn't look like anybody has a question or comment, so we will proceed accordingly. So just going back briefly to the decade for African people, I'll just give you a couple other bullet points for what some of the goals and objectives are in that regard. And these are some of the things that folks have been looking at so that when the time comes for there to be dialogue forums and so forth, these are some of the areas that they will be or have drawn from. Promote respect, protection, and fulfillment of all human rights and fundamental freedoms by people of African descent as recognized in the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Promote a greater knowledge of and respect diverse heritage, culture, and contribution of people of African descent for the African descent to the development of societies. Adopt and strengthen national, regional, and international legal frameworks according to the Durban Declaration and Program of Action and the International Convention on the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination, and to assure their full and effective implementation. Now, there's two things I mentioned there that, once again, most are not familiar with. One, the Durban Declaration and Program of Action, and the International Convention on the Elimination of Forms of Racial Discrimination. Now, these are two of the other things, along with a few others, that we will be reviewing, discussing when we have the National Black Women's Political Convention in March. Actually, it'll kick off February the 28th through March the 5th. And there will be sessions specifically geared to our women that will focus on creating a national Black women's political agenda. Next year is also, not just International Decade for African People finale year, but it's also a president election year. So that means we need to be ready to at least be able to act like we have some sense in the context of presenting a collective agenda to these various presidential candidates, as well as some of the people that are in the local areas. So as Black women, we will come up with an agenda in March that we will present to the various candidates. So again, those who are interested in being involved in that, papers are getting ready to be accepted for those who want to be presenters, and pre-registration is also going to be kicking off beginning on December 27th, I think it is. Yeah. Okay. And so we'll be giving you more information about all of that during the course of this week. But again, for Black women, our Million Woman March, Universal Movement, National Black Political Agenda is getting ready to be put in place to be ready for next year so that we can present it to the candidates, present it to the masses of our people too. Because again, there should be no discussion about voting unless there's some kind of Black agendas that's being presented to these people. And so we will be presenting one from Black women, particularly given the fact that President Biden and Vice President Harris said that it was Black women that really kind of helped them get in office. And so, again, you know, we can't just sit back and just let that be like that and not have something in the mix, whereby, you know, literally we are able to say, hey, if you want our vote, here's some of the things you got to look at that we want, right? So, again, I'm going to give you more information about that as we proceed later on this week with our Here We Stand conference. And, of course, we take the Here We Stand from the great Paul Robeson. That was the name of his book. And we will be taking this week's sessions all the way up to the 18th, because on December 17th, that is when Paul Robeson did, in fact, take the petition to the United Nations in 1951, We Charge Genocide. And then on December 18th, we will do a special session that hails up the spirit and the work of Stephen Biko as we now bring forward our concept and ideas of Black consciousness and putting it into some activation with the We Charge Genocide 21. And so again, on December 18th, that session will focus on some of the work of Stephen Biko. And, of course, where do we go from here? Okay, moving right along, going back to the articles. Okay. Article 1 to 2. We'll just say, because I'm going to kind of simplify some of this so that we can get through it. And, again, We sent it out through our network. So those of you who did not receive the document, which had all of the articles on it, feel free to let me know, and we will be more than happy to send it out to you. So, give me one moment. There we go. So, we're going to go back now to Universal Decade. Wait a minute. Okay, here we go. We're going to go to the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Let's do that. Okay. So I read the preamble. So now I'm going to read Article 1 and 2, 3, 4, 5, and 6. 1. All human beings are born free and equal in dignity and rights. They are endowed with reason and conscience and should act towards one another in the spirit of brotherhood. 2. Article 2. Everyone is entitled to all the rights and freedoms set forth in this declaration without distinction of any kind, such as race, color, sex, language, religion, political or other opinion, national or social origin, property, birth, or other status. Furthermore, no distinction shall be made on the basis of the political jurisdictional or international status of the country or territory to which a person belongs, whether it be independent, trust, non-self-governing, or under any other limitation of sovereignty. Article 3, everyone has the right to life, liberty, and security of person. Let me read that one again. Article 3, everyone has the right to life, liberty, and security of person. Article 4, no one shall be held in slavery or servitude. Slavery and the slave trade shall be prohibited in all forms. Let me read that again. No one shall be held in slavery or servitude. Slavery and the slave trade should be prohibited in all their forms. Article number 5. No one shall be subjected to torture or to cruel, inhumane, or degrading treatment or punishment. Article number 6. Everyone has the right to recognition everywhere as a person before the law. Now, we're going to go back to that one at another time because that's a very interesting wording there. I'm going to read it again. And for those of you who feel the need to take some notes on that or put an asterisk on that one, again, everyone has the right to recognition everywhere as a person before the law. So we need to elaborate on that, and we will do that at another time. But just, you know, kind of put a little marking on that so we can go back to that. And also, we're going to go back to Article 4 and Article 5, because when you know the 13th Amendment of the U.S. Constitution, it clearly says that slavery is illegal with the exception of being incarcerated or, shall we say, charged with a felony. Okay, that's kind of what it says. So it's clearly saying that slavery can be done if that criteria is met. It doesn't say slavery is ended totally. So we need to be very clear about that. So that's something that definitely needs to be brought forward in our We Charge Genocide 21 conversation, and that is the 13th Amendment. What needs to be done about it? And again, with the presidential election coming, that needs to be a conversation about that. Or shall we say that needs to be something that we need to conversate about in terms of, is that something we need to be looking at presenting? That this is something that needs, you know, this needs to be addressed. So again, These are some of the things that we are now in the process of doing, and also challenging others as well. Groups and organizations that are dealing with social justice issues, the question has to now be, to what extent are we actually educating the masses of our people? And so while it's very important that we help our people to know what their basic rights are, from what we're seeing is that it's very limited and it's kind of regulated to civil rights, which is good, it's fine. But clearly, Brother Malcolm told us what? That it's very important that we go to the next level and that we address the situation in the context of human rights. And so this is what we're now going to do. And by the way, Brother Malcolm X said that over 50 years ago. Over 50 years ago, he suggested, and not just suggested, but made it very clear that we need to take our issues to the United Nations as it pertains to human rights violations. So, with that said, let us hear from the great Brother Malcolm X, El Hajj Malik.
For the past 10 years, the struggle in America has been confined to what has been projected to the public as a civil rights struggle. And in that context, it has remained a domestic problem. It has remained within the jurisdiction of the United States. And as such, it has been impossible for the Afro-Americans or American Negroes to try and enlist the support of other dark-skinned people who are being oppressed the world over in that struggle. And the difference now in the direction that the struggle is taking from the direction that the struggle has been going in the past, there are many of our people who are thinking more deeply and more broadly and are beginning to see the importance of lifting it out of the national context or out of the domestic context or beyond the jurisdiction of the United States government. And the only way this can be done is by internationalizing the problem and putting it at a level where it can be taken into the United Nations. And then all of the other independent nations on this earth can involve themselves in our struggle and support us. And the only way of which this can be done, instead of it being called civil rights in the future, we're going to have to label it a human rights struggle or the struggle for human rights. And as such, we can then take it into the United Nations through the avenues that have been set up by the United Nations Commission on Human Rights. We can take our problem before the United Nations in the same manner that the problem of South Africa, Angola, Mozambique, Hungary, the Arab refugee problem, it becomes a world problem. And as a world problem, then the Afro-American or the so-called Negroes equal results because it's not left up to the one who's responsible for it anymore, but it's put at a level where the whole can see that our plight is wrong. It stood in our path in the past. It also makes a difference in the leadership. Those who have been posing as leaders of our people in America in the past, they can pose on this local stage where Uncle Sam is the master of the show and can prop them up and make them look good or make them look better than they actually are by giving them token gains and building them up an image. But when they step onto the international stage or the world stage, then Uncle Sam can't prop them up anymore. And their ability or lack of ability becomes exposed. And if they can lead us forward, they remain leaders. But if they can't, then they have to step aside and more qualified and bona fide leaders step up from the masses of our people, and then we get faster progress. We get more results.
The Afro-American or American Negro intellectual permitted himself to be used in a way that wasn't really beneficial to the overall Afro-American struggle. But I think today these intellectuals have begun to undertake a new appraisal of the problem, looking at it as it actually is, and are beginning to see it more in the international context and the relation that it has with the African struggle. And the African intellectual is beginning to look at the problem in the African context and see that what might be good in one country, in order for it to be used in another country, has to be rearranged. You take African socialism. Many of the African intellectuals that have analyzed the approach of socialism are beginning to see where the African has to use a form of socialism that's that fits into the African context, whereas the form that is used in a European country might be good for that particular European country. It doesn't fit as well into the African context. So I think the African intellectual is making that contribution, and he's making it well.
...to the circumstances of peace and provide personal solutions to accelerate our sustainable development.
In this crooked game of power politics here in America, the Negro, namely the race problem, integration, civil rights issue, are all nothing but tools used by the whites who call themselves liberals against another group of whites who call themselves conservatives, either to get into power or to retain power. Among whites here in America, the political teams are no longer divided into Democrats and Republicans. The whites who are now struggling for control of the American political throne are divided into liberal and conservative camps. The white liberals from both parties cross party lines to work together toward the same goal. And white conservatives from both parties do likewise. The white liberal differs from the white conservative only in one way. The liberal is more deceitful, more hypocritical than the conservative. Both want power, but the white liberal is the one who has perfected the art of posing as the Negro's friend and benefactor. And by winning the friendship and support of the Negro, the white liberal is able to use the Negro as a pawn or a weapon in this political football game that is constantly raging between the white liberals and the white conservatives. The American Negro is nothing but a political football. And the white liberals control this ball through tricks or tokenism, false promises of integration and civil rights. In this game of deceiving and using the American Negro, the white liberals have complete cooperation of the Negro civil rights leader, who sell our people out for a few crumbs of token recognition, token gains, token progress. In the New York Tribune, in an editorial dated February the 5th, 1960, they pointed out that out of 11 million qualified Negro voters, only 2,700,000 actually take time to vote. This means that, roughly speaking, only 3 million out of the 11 million Negroes who are qualified to vote take an active part, and the remaining 8 million remain voluntarily inactive. And yet it is this small minority, the 3 million Negro voters, who help determine who will be the next president. If who will be the next president can be influenced by 3 million Negro voters, it is easy to see why the presidential candidates of both political parties put on such a false show with the Civil Rights Bill and promises of integration. They must impress the 3 million voting Negroes who are the actual integration seekers. And if so much fuss is made over these 3 million integration seekers, what would the presidential candidates have to do to appease the 8 million non-voting Negroes if they ever decided to become politically active? They hold the balance of power. Who are the 8 million non-voting Negroes? What do they want? And why don't they vote? The 3 million Negro voters are the so-called middle-class Negroes, or high-class Negroes, or uppity Negroes, who are referred to by the late Howard University sociology professor E. Franklin Frazier as the black bourgeoisie, who have been educated to think as patriotic individualists with no racial pride whatsoever, who believe in and look forward to the future integrated, intermarried society that is constantly being promised to them by the Negro politician. And therefore, this integration-minded 3 million minority remain an active part of the white-controlled political parties. But it must never be overlooked that these 3 million Negro integration speakers are only a small minority of the 11 million qualified Negro voters. The 8 million non-voting Negroes are the majority, the downtrodden black masses. They have refused to vote. They've refused to take a part in politics because they reject the Uncle Tom approach of the clergy politician leadership that has been handpicked for the so-called Negroes by the white man himself. This clergy politician leadership does not speak for the Negro majority. They don't speak for the black masses. They speak for the black bourgeoisie, the brainwashed, white-minded, middle-class minority, who, because they are ashamed of their race, because they are ashamed of being black and don't want to be identified with black, they are seeking to lose this black identity by mixing and mingling and intermarrying and integrating with the white society. The race problem cannot be solved by listening to the white-minded, brainwashed minority. The white man must try to learn what the black majority wants. The president would be wise to try and learn what the black masses want. And the only way to find this out is by listening to the man who speaks for the black masses. And I can declare to you tonight and to the entire world that the man here in America who speaks for the majority, the downtrodden, dissatisfied black masses, is this same man who so many thousands of our people are flocking toward to see and hear. This same...
Okay, so, isn't that interesting? I mean, you hear what Brother Malcolm just said, and that was over 50 years ago. Yet, we are seeing the same things right here today with the same people, the same kinds of behavior, and so forth. So obviously, family, something else needs to be happening, because in 50 years, we're still talking about the same things in the same kinds of ways, and in fact, gotten worse. Because now, some of these people really have put into their conversation various aspects of things that makes it sound like or appears like they really dealt with some things. They have really gotten it down like that. And so it's a very interesting situation. So listen, moving right along, going to give you 7 to 12. Of the articles, and then we're going to stop there for tonight. Excuse me. So article number 7, and again, we're talking about the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And we are taking our time providing this information so that those who are interested can go to a website and hear tonight's broadcast, where they will hear what we're talking about. And as we break down these articles or these areas that the Universal Declaration of Human Rights has cited as being our rights, all so-called human beings' rights. And again, these are reference points that can be utilized for future strategies and campaigns and other things, because the countries signed on to agree with this. And so we're going to be breaking down to you how that can be used in our best entries, as Brother Malcolm told us over 50 years ago it would. Anyway, article number 7. All are equal before the law and are entitled without any discrimination to equal protection of the law. Ooh, boy. All are entitled to equal protection against any discrimination in violation of this declaration and against any incitement to such discrimination. Article 8. Everyone has the right to an effective remedy by the competent national tribunals for acts violating the fundamental rights granted by the Constitution or by law. Now put an asterisk, please, next to Article 18. Because, again, I'll read it again, everyone has the right to an effective remedy by the competent national tribunals for acts violating the fundamental rights granted him by the Constitution or by law. So again, with the Recharge Genocide 21, what you will hear us begin to do in the very near future as we now formulate the chapters and other components in various cities, those chapters in those cities will be establishing as a part of the mode of operations components that enables tribunals so that we can have hearings. Now, one will take place here in Philly on or around May 13th. Because that is when, in 1985, a bomb was dropped here. And we will be doing a special session around that time to begin to put further into fruition or a manifestation our commission on the bombing in Philadelphia. We're putting together an independent commission. And that commission is going to examine the report from the commission that was established in 1986 by the city of Philadelphia. We're going to look at that report and see what they said, what their findings were. But we're going to also hold our own independent tribunal so that the masses of our people can engage in that process and then make a statement or a judgment or a declaration based on the information that they hear, what the findings are, what they feel should be happening or should have happened or whatever once they hear the information. So again, we're coming with plans of action. And it is because without that, it's just merely conversation. And conversation is definitely good. But in this day and age, it has to be coupled with actual plans of action and then the implementation of those actions. So, with that said, just to recap for a minute, and we're going to go back to the articles, we do know that the bombing situation, which, of course, was directly targeting the MOVE organization, we know that even though that happened in 1985, there are still present-day atrocities connected to that to this day. And the more recent, of course, is the fact that some of the remains of two of the children was given to or allowed to be utilized at two universities, University of Pennsylvania and Princeton University, that the remains were allowed to be used for study and other kinds of things for the students, et cetera, and without the permission of the family. Also, very recently, an exhibit was put up here in Philadelphia, a MOVE exhibit. And again, it is really kind of questionable as to, you know, certain aspects of that, given the fact that the only surviving person from that bomb being dropped and the only person that went to jail as a result of it, Ramona Africa, was not even invited to participate in any process of that exhibit that now is a permanent exhibit here in Philadelphia on the MOVE bombing. She was not even asked to attend the unveiling. And so that in itself should tell you that something is real strange with that whole thing. Okay, going back to the articles. I just read Article 8. We're going to Article 9. No one shall be subjected to arbitrary arrest, detention, or exile. Article 10. Everyone is entitled to full equality to a fair and public hearing by an independent and an impartial tribunal, which also means hearing, or can mean hearing, in the determination of his rights and obligations and of any criminal charge against him. So, no, I'm just going to go to the next one. I'm not going to comment on that. Article 11, everyone charged in a penal offense has the right to be presumed innocent until proven guilty according to law in a public trial at which he has had all the guarantees necessary for his defense. That was number one of that Article 11. And then there's number two, no one shall be held guilty of any penal offense on account of any act or omission which did not constitute a penal offense under national or international law at the time when it was committed, nor shall a heavier penalty be imposed than the one that was applicable at the time the penal offense was committed. Article 12, no one shall be subjected to arbitrary interference with his privacy, family, home, or correspondences. Hold on, gotta scroll down. Okay. Okay, that was the end of that one. Okay, so that was the last one on that was 17. All right, so I'm going to stop there for now. And again, I want to go back for 1 minute. Oh, wait a minute. No. Did I ever answer? Yeah, I'm going to go back for 1 minute on, I want you to put an asterisk, put an indication at article. Oh, wait a minute. Did I miss something here? Freelance movement. Okay, nope. I'm sorry. I missed something there. I must have jumped over something. I did. My apologies. I went to Article 17, and I think I missed a couple prior to that. Let me go back for 1 minute. Okay. Nope, that was Article 12. I'm sorry. There we go. Okay, that was Article 12. And let me finish up with Article 12 because somehow it jumped me over to Article 17. Okay, Article 12, finishing that up, nor to attacks under his honor and reputation. Everyone has the right to the protection of the law against such interferences or attacks. Okay, so that was the completion of Article 12. My apologies. My computer went into its own little modality. So let me just read Article 12 one more time. No one shall be subjected to arbitrary interference in his privacy, family, home, or correspondence, nor to attacks upon his honor and reputation. Everyone has the right to the protection of the law against such interference or attack. Now, if you haven't kind of gotten this yet, even though this says or focusing on, or the concept is human rights, obviously some of this kind of overlaps or interacts with civil rights. This is why, again, Brother Malcolm taught us we have to go from civil rights to human rights, but know that, you know, some of this is interconnected, right? It's just knowing the applications. So I'm going to stop right there, family. That was the last one there was Article 12. So we'll pick back up on this tomorrow, and we'll finish it up and go to the next one. Okay, let me do this. Since there's 30 of them, I'm going to do half. I'm going to move on to Article 15 and stop there. And then tomorrow we will move forward with the final ones. And again, you know, if you have questions or comments, these are for lack of a better word, preliminary tutorials, meaning we're giving folks the general information. At another session or at other sessions, we'll be breaking down each one to some degree so that we can get real insight and clarity for those who are interested in being able to work in this area of human rights, because we can't proceed and talk about human rights violations and folks not know what we're really talking about. So we're giving people the capability to become not only more familiar with what we're talking about, but to literally be one of the change agents utilizing some of these tools. And some of this will be strategies that we will be presenting, that we develop and will be presenting. Okay, so that was 12. Let me go to 13. Article 13, everyone has the right to freedom of movement and residence within the borders of each state. Everyone has the right to leave any country, including his own, and to return to his country. Yeah, we know that's tricky right there. But Article 14, everyone has the right to seek and to enjoy in other countries asylum, from prosecution or persecution. This right may not be invoked in the case of prosecution genuality or genuineness arising from non-political crimes or from acts contrary to the purposes and principles of the United Nations. Everyone has the right to a nationality, and that's Article 15, number one. Everyone has the right to a nationality. Two of that same article is, no one shall be arbitrarily deprived of his nationality, nor denied the right to change his nationality. So we're going to stop right there. And tomorrow we're going to talk a little more about why MWM is now presenting and bringing forward several new units and components, one being the National Association for the Advancement of Black People. Again, civil rights. Right now, there's only really one primary civil rights entity representing black folks, and that is the National Association of Negro People, whatever. And again, from a historical perspective, you know, they did wonderful things, particularly during a time period when you had nothing. So we can't dismiss that. But unfortunately today, we have to call it the way it is. So with that said, we need to go to the next level. And with that, we are now proposing the National Association for the Advancement of Black People. And there will be some upcoming forums that we will begin to widen our scope with that. The other association, and again, this will be applied now to the We Charge Genocide 21. The other area, and again, we oftentimes hear other people talk about how they're protecting themselves. Well, we are now ready to bring forward the Black Anti-Defamation League. You've heard of other folks having anti-defamation leagues. Well, so shall we. So that means now if our people are attacked in such a way that it is to, you know, try to defame them or try to, you know, character assassinate them or set them up or whatever, our anti-defamation league need to be going into effect and helping to protect them. And so, again, this is now going to be one of the new units for the We Charge Genocide 21. We've been proposing these things for over 3 years, and folks are just dragging their feet. And so now we're going to make it happen. So, again, these will be new units for the We Charge Genocide 21. And now membership is definitely, you know, it has to be put in the proper context now. We need people to become members. And in becoming a member, it gives folks the capability to be a part of what we now call the New Maroon Society. which goes back to one of the articles that talks about everyone has the right to a nationality. And so while a lot of people are now latching on to that, calling themselves this, that, or the other, and that's fine because, you know, that's their business. They do whatever is best for them. That doesn't mean that, you know, some other forms of nationality or recognition as such should not be brought forward. And so now it shall be. And so one of the first steps in doing that is what we call the New Maroon Society. We are now moving forward to establish our own entity in being recognized as a people so that as we proceed to do business and other things, we can do that as a people being recognized in the context of a nationality. And before we finalize that, this is a prelude. This is a what's known as a provisional or a pro tem structure. But at some point, we will hold a national plebiscite, and at that point, people will be able to vote on what we wish to be called for as we move forward. So these are some of the things that we're now introducing, family. Tomorrow we'll talk more about plebiscite or pre-plebiscites because we want our people to, again, know what we are talking about. What is a plebiscite? What can it do? Why is it that we must have one? What will our first pre-plebiscites entail? We're going to give you that information tomorrow. And also go into the last 15 articles of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. And tomorrow we will also talk more about Mumia Abu-Jamal. The call has gone out for those who are writers already, authors, doing any kind of writing. Poetry, stories, you name it. We need now a component that will not only work to help free Mumia, but will also continue the kinds of capabilities he has as a journalist. So the Mumia Abu-Jamal School of Journalism is getting ready to go into effect. You can sign up now, and there will be correspondence classes. I need to sign up. But there will be correspondence classes. And, Mumia will help those who are interested to fine-tune whatever skills they may already have, as well as, for beginners. And we are partnering with the National Black Unity News. So in the next edition, which should be coming out in January, we are going to begin to start featuring articles that we publish, that we write. And again, this is a part of this new unit that's coming so that we can feature our own articles in a national newspaper, and it's also online. So we'll be telling you more about that this week as well. All right, family, we're going to close this session out. We're going to try to keep these sessions within the scope of an hour, not more than an hour and a half. And guess what? We have just about reached that point. So we'll be back tomorrow at the same time. We will continue on with tonight's session and add on some additional things. If you need a listing of this week's activities, some of them will be on Zoom. You can just email us at nationalmwm@aol.com. Again, nationalmwm@aol.com. Or you can email us at nbhrproject@gmail.com. Again, nbhrproject@gmail.com. And, of course, that's for the National Black Human Rights Project. Let's see if there's anything else I wanted to share with you for tonight. I guess I can just wait until tomorrow. All right, family, so listen, we're going to close this session out. We are on the move. Needless to say, and getting this stuff done, calling it the way it needs to be called, and doing it in a manner that our ancestors would want us to do it, needless to say. So, pass the word. We will be sending out another blurb a little later on tonight for tomorrow's program. Please feel free to share it. And again, preferably, you know, have some questions or some thoughts or whatever about some of the information that we're sharing. If you have suggestions, ideas about how we can further getting this information out to the masses in particular, to students, then feel free to let us know, because that's what one of our main missions is now, getting information to the masses, not just to the people that already know some of this, but to the people that don't know. So until tomorrow, same time, family, we will definitely keep on moving forward and talk to you tomorrow. All right. Tutanana, which means goodbye. Peace.